All right. Ready for another humdinger of a show.
All right.
Do the next right thing to make your marriage sing.
All I ever wanted was to be in love with you. When your eyes met mine, I knew that this was really true. All the flowers.
Hello and welcome to the Music of Marriage with Bob.
Never make it.
Right? Are you there?
I am here in the flesh.
I forgot my role as a wife and I spoke over you. Forgive
and I
me.
I am indeed Bob, and she is indeed
Evelyn.
Yes.
Well, I mean Evie. Well, my friends call me Evie, so you can choose which one
I call,
you want to be.
I call her Evelyn when I take her out on a date, you know, and then she becomes very special.
Then I become special?
Well, you kind of look classy when we're out.
Oh.
You know.
I'm glad
nice
I know that then I become special.
Whoops.
This is the music of marriage, so we better at least pretend that we're perfect. We know everything everybody needs to know about marriage.
Yeah, and they don't know all the in-between stuff, so.
Okay. Well, it's another Tuesday afternoon, and also we have podcasts on our website, themusicofmarriage.com, so if you don't get to hear the whole show, we're trying to put them up as we get on.
More quickly.
Get them up there. So if you had to go and pump gas or stop through a drive-in through or something, or change the laundry from the washer to the dryer or something, you're still not going to miss the show. And you can share those podcasts, right, Robert?
Absolutely.
Bob?
And if you're out of range from the radio station or want to share it with a friend, that's the way to go.
So we have songs that we have written and recorded on the player there, and a book called How to Make Your Marriage Sing. And it's available for sale there or on Amazon, but through our website too. 5 Biblical Dynamics to Keep the Music Playing. You know that in music, they have what they call dynamics. If you're a musician, you know that. And dynamics are the things like the louds and the softs and the it's what adds the drama and the interest, right? So it's
music,
not
yeah.
flat and boring. Mm-hmm. And that's the same how marriage should be. And our marriages can easily kind of get flat and boring, like soda that sits too long or something.
Exactly.
And so we have been married a while, and we've enjoyed I guess benefiting from, like, it gets us happy to know what God's intent for marriage is, because it's like, oh, you know, the lights go on and things just work better that way. And we've been saddened by seeing other people have, shall I say, no information or experience of, or positive outlook on it, of what it could be. And so we like to share, and we hope it encourages you. I have heard from a few people that it does encourage them. I think there are probably more. But anyway, it encourages us enough that we've been here for 2.5 years or so coming up with themes for what to talk about. And that's always fun to do, but now and then is what we thought we would make our theme. And if you're in music or have heard any recent new songs out, you might have an idea why we decided to call it Now and Then. Well, actually, when you hear the first song, I think you'll know. But we thought that's a cool concept with regard to marriage. Well, you could apply it to so many things, but the idea that God, back then, initiated the whole circle of life and how was going to work the best so that it would keep rolling smoothly from generation to generation. So what we want to do is look at then and then look at now, fast forward to now, and try to make sure we're adapting and keeping that same circle going, which means, like we were saying in recent weeks, understanding what we're being deceived and lied to about. And we have to seek truth and speak truth, really, to ourselves. And that guides us, and that keeps us rolling, you know, on the right track.
Yeah, and the then and now is not a continuum in the sense that that was back then, this is now. It's more of a now is based on the back then.
Right. Well,
yeah, so it doesn't.
Because in God's, you know, God's eternal and he's unchangeable. So why would what he said back then suddenly be like too old fashioned for us?
Right.
You know,
right.
Am I going to tell God, no, you kind of like, I kind of know better because I'm in the 21st century. So I'm not sure you really covered all the bases.
It's kind of like if they take history out of schools and teach something else, like ideology, for instance. The kids think that they're the incarnation of history, like nothing came before them, and they are it, and that's all that matters, and they have nothing to learn from the past, and that's that's not the case, because history
will teach us something.
Will teach us.
Sorry, Sting. That one line in his song.
Yeah, right.
History will teach you nothing. And I always think, are you kidding me? Like, I need, what's his number? I need to call him up. History always teaches us things. In fact, it's because of what you learn from history that you're deciding to go a different way.
No,
if history,
no, yeah.
You know what I mean? If I history mean,
we,
didn't teach you.
We love Sting, don't get me wrong.
Oh, we do.
But he did refer to history when he quoted Shakespeare in one of his songs. My mistress' eyes are nothing like the sun was a Shakespeare quote, actually.
So he learned something from
and history. He added my hunger for her, something else. We'll never be done or something like that. But yeah, and one of his songs actually was a direct copy of Johann Sebastian Bach.
Shh.
And
people don't know that.
Yeah, he doesn't exist. Sorry, I shouldn't have mentioned that.
Well, unless they play preludes and fugues of Bach like I do, they... Man, just let them enjoy it. It's fine.
Yes.
Besides, Bach never copyrighted his work.
No,
it's public domain.
No, it's fine that he did that. It's,
yeah.
You know, but I'm just saying, that's history.
Would that we all would learn more from Bach. Anyway, we're trying to talk about marriage, and it has something to do with this, what we're talking about, because history is the now, the then and the now. And so we have to remember what it is that has made, that helped the survival of civilization, which we know who started that whole thing. So we have to keep that main thing to the main thing, and that is that when God created people, he created them male and female, and pairing is part of his plan from the beginning. So this pairing that is the male and female that creates the continuum between the then and the now, it's the reason you can have Thanksgiving dinner with pictures, you know, with grandma, and oh, there's great-grandpa, and there's great-great-grandpa, and, you know, history. Our history, we come from that pairing. If you'll remember when God flooded the earth because he figured nobody's interested in doing anything the way I established things to go, so I'll just kind of start over. And when he asked Noah to build the ark, for which Noah was mocked for building an ark in a desert area, he also told him to get a pair of all the animals and it wasn't two male elephants, and it wasn't two female lions. It was a male and female of each, for reasons probably anybody can figure out. So that's the continuum of history. That's what keeps it going. And had he not created it that way, and if we interrupt that established built-in creation reality, then we too will interrupt civilization and basically choke it off.
Sinclair Ferguson had a poignant point on that topic right there, where he said, the strategy of the world is to hijack the meaning of marriage with counterfeit alternatives. And in doing so, tear God from his throne and deconstruct every single one of his creation ordinances, the central of which and the apex of which is Genesis 1. He made them male and female. This distinction or antithesis is meant to teach us something. There's always a pairing throughout Genesis. So that was a talk on Pursuing Godly Marriage by Sinclair Ferguson. And that's very... So there's more there than meets the eye, you know. It's like, well, we've all heard, yeah, you know, he created a man and woman. But today, you would never know that because everyone is re-identifying as whatever they want to be. And, you know, so, you know, you hear a lot about women's sports being jeopardized by women, males who identify as women. Well, that's obviously not how it works. And the same thing goes with what we've seen with homosexuality. Well, that's not how the procreation of the race works, and that's not how God designed us. In fact, that doesn't even define marriage according to Genesis. And God is the author of marriage and the sole definer of marriage. And he's mandated how things should go. So, you know, when one supports something, say, for instance, like gay marriage, which may look legitimate in their eyes because we're supposed to be loving toward all people, well, that's actually not loving your neighbor if it's dishonoring God and saying that what he made was insufficient, and we need to make our own rules up. We need to make our own choices, and the beauty of making choices is that God gave us that capability, which the animals don't have. The animals just simply obey God, and there's no questions asked. You don't see two hyenas, females, trying to mate, right? Or two male birds trying to get along and have a family, build a nest. You don't see that stuff. That's because the animals are basically controlled by how God created them. Well, he created us the same way, except he gave us a choice. And there's a reason for that choice, because God wants people who acknowledge his uniqueness and his authority over all creation and his ability to say this is the way it must be, and any other way is not going to work for you. And that's basically what happens. So when we submit to God's plan, things work. When we don't, they basically fall apart. And so there's a good reason. And also, God also wanted us to be able to acknowledge him as the sole authority of all creation, morally speaking as well.
That's why he says in the book of Isaiah, he says, quote, "For my own sake, for my own sake, I do it. I will not give my glory to another." He was talking about it. The context there was, he was trying to let us know that, you know, I do what I do. Actually, our granddaughter, she says, "I do what I do."
Yeah.
She's a reprimanded for something. I do what I do. Well, that's how we often are to God. You know, I do what I do. Well, God's saying, for my own sake, I do it. I will not give my glory to another. And so it's kind of like he's saying, you know, how many times do I have to tell you? He has his reasons. And that is how the now and the then tie together. We need the then. We need to be looking back at the then and keep utilizing those principles that work in order to be happy and not defile what God made as called good. And in the New Testament, it says in Thessalonians, "For this is the will of God, that you abstain from sexual immorality." I wonder what that even is. Is that a thing? Sexual immorality.
Well, it goes on to explain.
I thought everything is cool now. So we should rip that one out of the Bible. Get your marker out. Whoops. It says, "So that each one of you know how to control his own body in holiness and honor, not in the passion of lust like the Gentiles who do not know God, so that no one will transgress and wrong his brother or sister in this matter, because the Lord is an avenger in these things, as we told you beforehand and solemnly warned you." This is Paul talking in the New Testament in 1 Thessalonians 4. "For God has not called us for impurity, but in holiness, to holiness. And therefore, whoever disregards this, disregards not man." So when you're voting in Franklin for whatever you're voting for, or whether you're in your own mind accepting or not accepting something, it says, "Therefore, whoever disregards this, disregards not man, but God, who gives his Holy Spirit to you." So the other is the part that we need to complete us. We're made to function in pairs. Sometimes we're married, but we live as single as possible in our mind, or with our time, or with our money.
You know, not any pairs, by the way. We're meant to function as distinct pairs. In other words, it's not a one-size-fits-all proposition. It's one-size-fits-one-size.
Right.
You are meant for me, and no one else was meant for me, and vice versa. And so that's the pair God had in mind, because God already designed the perfect mate for every married couple. He's already got it all selected. And if we don't see that, it might be easy to think, well, as soon as trouble comes along, well, maybe we didn't find the right mate. Maybe she really isn't my soulmate, or something like that. When actually, if you're seeking God's will in the whole thing, he will give you the right mate from the beginning. And the reason why this gets overlooked is because people give up too easy when the little bit of trouble comes along. But and sometimes it takes a lot of trouble, admittedly. But still, the right mate was chosen by God from the very beginning for you. And if you stick it out with that mate, they'll always be the right mate, because marriage was meant to last forever. And granted, there are exceptions, but that, as a rule, as the rule, that's the way it was designed, and that's the way it works best.
And so now, if we acknowledge and are willing to think about and listen to what God has to say about things, instead of just what we see on the news and what is the popular trend, and, oh, we heard in such and such country they passed a law that now you can do this. Oh, okay, I guess it's okay now. Well, now in the college campuses they allow this, you know. I remember actually in the 70s when they allowed in the dorms guys and girls to share dorms, right?
Yeah.
So as we say, oh, okay, well, then I guess that's my guide. That must be the right thing. The college has decided to do it. And the dusty old Bible sits there. And we're not, and then we run into all kinds of trouble of all kinds and all kinds of heartache. And we wonder, where did we go wrong? I thought the experts told us that this was okay. And we kind of forget that the original expert is our creator. So it's really important to remember and hear those words echoing through history. If you watch the new video by the Beatles called Now and Then, you see with the AI how they incorporated, you know, John Lennon and George Harrison into this beautifully performed finish of a song, I guess, that John had recorded that was laying around on a cassette tape. And it's pretty well shot up to the top of the charts in the last week or so. So that kind of was inspiring to us, because even he realized, and they're realizing, you know, the then and the now, it all ties together, and we're all part of making that happen and making that, keeping that restored and renewed.
Yes.
Keeping that going.
And not only is the concept of pairs a then thing, It's a now thing in that we were made to function in pairs. It's not just that God created pairs, and that's how he designed marriage. It's that we were created to function as pairs. And so the question is, are you living as married but as single as possible in your mind, or with your time or your money? Are you aware of how incomplete you really are? Without the exact qualities and experiences and background of the spouse you're paired with by God's design. In fact, you haven't even found your true self until you found the one that God prepared for you in marriage. Then you're complete. That's what I was talking about before. You find your true personality, actually, when it comes to marriage, by being completed with your spouse. And That's pretty cool. So whenever God creates anything, he also creates an antithesis or opposite, which ignites the desired intended purpose. And now we have a song.
That's why they say opposites attract, I guess, right?
That's why.
Maybe.
That's
right. Part of the reason. I don't know.
The new hit from the Beatles, their first one since 50 years ago. Amazing. They never cease to amaze. Now and then.
So all because
We're back with Music of Marriage. Just heard from the Beatles, Now and Then. And
what is the music of marriage? A song? A book?
It should be if
plain.
It wasn't. Yes, no, it's our show, babe. That was that was the original, actually, title of our book, The Music of Marriage. And we changed it to How to Make Your Marriage Sing.
That's right.
But anyway, that is the title of our show and the title of our website,
themusicofmarriage.com.
So, but we're talking about Now and Then in marriage. And
can I say something?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
We have podcasts up there. I know I said it before, but you might not have been listening when I said it. So you can share the radio shows or re-listen to them.
Yes. And Daryl has been so kind to turn them over to us in rapid fashion.
They've got the latest technology here. Technology here at WAKM.
Yeah.
It still works.
Yeah, there you go.
Timeless technology from the 50s. Yeah. See that? History.
Hey, most of the Beatles stuff was recorded on 50s stuff.
Well, the song we just heard was actually recorded in the mid-70s on a cassette tape with a lot of distracting noise that made it impossible to imagine how one could ever use any of it. But with today's technology.
And they remixed it, of course. But,
I told you I'd get you off track.
You sure did. But it's all over the place Now and Then, see. The fact is, too many of us live in the now, and we excuse our wrong behaviors and our wrong ideas by calling it progressive, postmodern, or socially accepted. You know, common people will believe anything if they're coerced or threatened or mocked or made to feel like they're out of style.
Well, that's the devil's plan, you know. If you want somebody to do something that they shouldn't do, you can put a lot of pressure in different kinds of ways to coerce them.
Yes, and now more than ever, we need to be critical thinkers.
Or silence them.
Yeah, sometimes you do. But we have to be critical in our thinking, because critically thinking people will end up with the best results because they're firmly planted in truth. And that's not to say all critical thinking is truth-based.
Critical thinking doesn't mean criticizing others. It means criticizing your own thoughts. Thinking critically of how you're thinking. Like, wait a minute, I'm saying this. Do I really think that? Or am I saying it because I learned it on the college campus? Or because at work, they kind of, you know, if I don't kind of pretend I go along with that line of thinking, then, you know, I might lose my job. So you're not then critically thinking. You're popularly thinking. You're trying to make yourself likable to people. But you actually will be more likable and more of a leader if you use your own brain and conscience that God gave you and align, you know, and criticize your own thought process. Does this seem to align with truth, or am I doing this? And we have to do this with so much in life, in marriage, you know. Am I doing this? Am I kind of pulling for myself here? Or am I doing this in order to get something? Mm-hmm. And what are my motives? So
are we afraid to speak up online because we'll get challenged or silenced or hollered at or disliked?
But truth remains the truth now as it was then, right?
Yeah, always.
And so it's important in an age of make up your own truth, which doesn't make any sense whatsoever. It's like a very, to me, 3-year-old excuse for I can do what I want. Like, come on, really? Your own truth? We all know there is a 12-inch ruler is one length. You can't come in with yours that's longer.
Right.
You know, so.
Yeah, and, you know, if you're not with the one you love, then love the one you're with. Was that one of those lines back in the 70s? Mm-hmm. And so that sounded very plausible, and a whole generation kind of believed it, but that they weren't critically thinking. They were thinking liberation, which really started the whole sexual revolution back as early as the 60s, actually. But that wasn't critical thinking. It was freedom-based thinking, but the freedom didn't last. It really led to chaos because it wasn't, there was no moral foundation. And when it comes to marriage, we have to think with a moral foundation, and we have to think how God intended marriage to be, and not act as if marriage only exists now. Because if we do, then our marriage now will be solely defined by our circumstances we face.
That we face now. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and when in reality marriage is defined by the then which God has graciously established for us so that we can live out of the wisdom and power of the union he made between man and woman. Not only just man and woman, but with a portion of his spirit in us, which is a huge factor in the success of marriage over the long haul. And we don't see this if we're living in the now circumstances, because circumstances change, feelings disrupt circumstances or create bad circumstances. And if we're living out of feelings, they're unreliable. If we're living by the book, then we've removed feelings from the equation because, as we know, that's you can't base any lifestyle or any successful pattern on feelings alone because they're so volatile. You have to base it on principle.
If you say things like, well, but you don't know my husband, or walk a mile in my moccasins, someone told me once, well, that's only 1 mile. I think marriage is a lot more miles than the one. And yeah. Sometimes it seems like it's going to be forever that way. But if you rein in your thought pattern and say, wait a minute, if I think objectively about this and put my immediate emotions aside, I can save this thing, And so when we say things like, well, my situation is this, and you don't know my wife or my husband, then you're basically only living in the now. And that's not how life works, to live in the now only. It's kind of like we said, it was kids in school not learning history. Or religion, they don't know where they came from, they don't know where they're going or why they're here. So same in marriage, the now, what we're doing should be defined by the then or a continuation of the original God-planned propagation of families throughout history through the man and the woman. And if you remove these distinctions between male and female, which we've seen that slowly happen in decades, the recent decades, of course, then we forget the first creation mandate. We know what a mandate is, right? It wasn't in the Ten Commandments, but it's a mandate that God said, be fruitful, multiply.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't, then that will be the death of civilization and humanity. And that's not, God didn't create mankind or animal kind to just peter out. So that's the way we keep the now and the then connected and the circle of life going, not just in the Disney sense, so the Elton John circle of life, whatever was that song. But we have to realize, you don't put square wheels on a car for a reason. So we need to stick with, I think the first wheel ever created back then, I don't know, do you know what year, Daryl, the first wheel was created and who created it?
I'm not going to say.
You're not? It's not Henry Ford. It's not Thomas Edison. Yeah, it was Edison.
No, it was a guy named Firestone.
Oh, yeah, right. Flintstone.
There you go, Barney and Fred.
So now we're reaching back in time. Now, do they still put round wheels on cars? I mean, come on, history will teach us nothing. Let's be progressive. Let's put square wheels on cars.
Right.
Not.
Yes, no, it's true, though. this whole completion effect is very interesting when you look at artwork. You know, being complete in marriage brings a sense of closure that enables what? A distraction-free pursuit of life together, basically. And the completion is not always apparent or visible, such as, you know, the covenant that binds you in marriage, that God established marriage as a basis for, or the promised future legacy that drives our desire to sustain the commitment of marriage. And so these things are not visible, but they're realities that exist and that actually hold things together. And it's kind of like an artist's painting where they leave out, an expressionist or impressionist will, you know, leave out parts of the picture, but your mind completes them because you know either what should be there or what could be there. But the what you bring to the table is the completion. So it's actually taking two to complete that picture. It's taking the artist who says, "Look, you figure out the rest," or you complete the rest in your own mind, and then you get to enjoy that painting or that drawing in a whole new way because, you know, you're bringing something to it. And so that's how marriage works. We're both bringing something unique to the table, right, Evelyn?
That's for sure.
Well, whenever Evelyn smiles at me, I have to say, right, Evelyn? But I'm not sure what the smile means. We're still trying to figure that out. See, 47 years, and we're still trying to figure it out. Well, actually, we're going on 48 this Thanksgiving, I have to say, and we're very 70s thankful.
70s were a good time. And that's when we got married.
We have you guys in our book, in our anniversary book coming up. It's just a few days away, isn't it?
What?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Thanksgiving Eve.
Thank you, Daryl. Yeah.
We chose to get married on Thanksgiving Eve, Wednesday, so that all the women in our church who put on this fantastic feast after our wedding would have go crazy because they also had Thanksgiving the next morning. We weren't thinking of them. We were thinking of ourselves because we thought we would always have something to be thankful for on Thanksgiving Day. Mm-hmm. If we had, it's kind of corny, but anyway, we always liked the fall.
It's not corny at all because Tony Robbins even gave a recent speech. Now, I'm not a complete fan of his, but I just heard that how he starts every day is with 20 minutes of a gratitude session. He spends 20 minutes and writes down everything he can think of that he's thankful for. That's pretty amazing.
Wow. All right. We can think about that while Daryl plays Real Love.
That's
by
right.
Another 70s group. Another one. Well, actually, was Real Love from the 70s or later?
I think that
was another one of those things that was
anthology
a scrap song.
It was an anthology, number two. So it was later, but this is the Beatles.
Real Love.
Waiting for you.
We're going to close out the music of marriage with a now and then retrospective kind of connecting the circle of life that God created with the now and forever, which is the last Beatles song we're going to play. John Lennon says now and forever in there. And it's called Woman. And that has to do with creation and then, the then that God created woman and man. And John Lennon obviously recognized this in that beautiful song that we'll play. So the everyday of activities of marriage are supported by these roles that are distinctive between man and women, men and women. Now, we all know that in God's eyes, a man and a woman are as equal as the day is long. So we don't need to cause any more trouble by pretending that somehow one is inferior, that there needs to be some competition between the man and the woman.
Right.
Or that we need to obliterate all the differences, and that'll really make it an even playing field. Well, neither of those ways really work in real life. And we have a little section in our book called How to Make Your Marriage Sing on page 71 that talks a little about how we saw the roles working in our marriage rather than viewing the roles stereotypically, which interestingly is what a lot of people said. Oh, I'm not into stereotypes. Well, what is right and what works, you don't just denounce that as just a stereotype. It's much more than that. It's what brings your life to life. And because marriage embodies so much more than artificial equality. You can never really put on a scale. You could never quantumize, you know, is a man more important or are you? But we do this even in our own marriages. It's like, well, it seems like you always spend more money when you go out and you buy, just, you know, you pay $160 for a watch and $150 for shoes, and it's great. And me, I go to the Goodwill, which is us, actually, which I'm happy about because...
Well, to be fair, you shop a lot more than I do.
And I do. It's not fair. And so, but this is my point, that I can say that in my mind, right? Well, no wonder our budget, or no wonder you just bought a $160 watch, and those stylish $85 shoes at Duluth, which is a great store, and I'm advertising for free. But am I allowed to say their name? Anyway, but this is good because this is the way God created us, and it's my way of helping Bob to have what he needs to do the kind of work he does well and comfortably, so that we're not paying doctor bills because his back and his feet are hurting and stuff. So we can so easily get into comparisons of equity. And it becomes really, when you go back to the then, the history, even to our own childhood, the then. How did I act when I was 3 or 4 or 5? Mm-hmm. Well, he has something better than me. Why can't I go to and get the, you know, why does my neighbor's wife get a Cadillac? And we have one car. Why do the men get this? Why do the women always get that? And it's always this bickering between us and in our minds, instead of saying, wait a minute, God didn't create it this way. Like,
and why do the men always get the last word? Well, actually, that's not always the case these days.
Wow. But I can't believe you even said that. I'm like, really?
Well, I mean...
you just incriminated yourself.
I mean, traditionally, it's, you know, the buck stops with a husband, right? Like God created marriage like any corporation, you know, there
that's
has
right.
to be
so
a chain of command.
Fill up the bank account. So, the buck stops with you. No, I'm
but
just
that's,
kidding.
That also means...
Especially when you spend it all.
I'm more accountable,
kidding.
In that sense. So so I got to be careful.
Well, these are things that we work out in our daily life. We all do. And we have to stop ourselves if we go on this spiral downward of finger pointing. And that's what this whole equality stuff is.
Yeah, there's no sense
it's to create division and broken relationships.
In God's environment, there's no sense of superiority in leadership role of a husband or servility in the submissive role of the wife. They work in harmony, you know, just like Christ was submissive to God when he went to the cross. And what did he achieve? Well, our salvation. That's incredible. But Christ was not servile. He was not less equal to God. In fact, he was equal to God, but he didn't count that as something to be grasped. He because he was a servant. And that's where these roles flourish, in that they're both servant roles. They're not, you know, I'm the leader, you're the follower. It's not about that. It's about how do we serve one another and create the greatest kind of equality within the context of how God commanded us to be responsible for different things.
And that'll keep us busy for our whole marriage long.
It will.
So I don't know if you have time or want to read anything from our book, How to Make Your Marriage Sing, on page 71, about the roles of and how that, you know, how that this pairing, the male and female, it's not an option, really, for the continuance of humankind and for our happiness. And it will improve all of our lives a lot if we can work on these things to prevent divorce. You know, I see these big signs when we move south, divorce prevention in the churchyard, divorce prevention. And I'm thinking, I'm sorry, divorce counseling, divorce? What is it? I'm thinking it should say divorce prevention.
It should say prevention. Yeah.
But it's, I can't think of it. support, yeah, like a support group. Okay. So this is good. We should always be supporting each other all the time. But I'm thinking, why don't they have a sign saying divorce prevention instead of divorce care? I think that's what it said. Because divorce care makes the assumption that, well, it's just, you know, it's just going to happen probably to a lot of people. So, oh, well. But why not go from the prevention? And that's what we hope to encourage. And this is what, of course, God encourages. And we, in our minds, if we think about, okay, I'm really being critical of my spouse in my mind right now because she did that, or he spent the money that way, or this keeps happening, or we seem to be losing touch with, or whatever. It could be pretty dramatic. It could be an everyday thing that's not of as much consequence. But we find ourselves in our selfish, self-serving nature because of our sin, that we make a problem out of things that divide us. And if we don't prevent that by correcting and getting ourselves in alignment with the then of God's original plan, then the forever is going to be pretty hard to achieve.
Yeah, and it also means that while both parties in a marriage are responsible to work out their tensions and conflicts, the husband is held accountable for reconciliation and for the restoration of love in the home. So get out of God's way and let him change your husband. Ladies and men,
Girls looking at me like, oh, that was heavy. I'm thinking.
Stand up for the truth. Right? Get out of God's way. And give every reason for your wife to respect you, men. Be a loving leader and live with your wife in an understanding way so that she's got something to grasp. And ladies, if you don't have something to grasp, pray that that will happen for you. Don't usurp God's role. He didn't intend you. Because then you'll be doubly responsible. But the husband still doesn't get a get-out-of-jail-free card by any means. But the important thing is not that this whole thing is just, you know, a beautifully harmonious thing that really works, that when it works like nothing, like no other institution in the world, marriage. And so both of you will find unity, harmony and fulfillment now and forever when you're looking at, or when you're operating out of the then in the now.
And forever.
That's right.
So here's John Lennon with this song called Woman.
Express my mixed emotions and my thoughtlessness.